No, really. For me, Ray is associated to the good things, and in science, but also in wines. So I have a couple bottles for you, but one is actually you paid for a long time ago. That my wife said, "When are you going to give this bottle to him?" I say, "Okay, that's a good occasion." So yeah, it's a pleasure to be here. I've been recently to a similar conference in Hong Kong, and I must say, this is a totally different event here. The scientific level justifies the conference by itself, whereas in China I was not quite. So it's really a pleasure to be here, both for the science and the people. And so the talk is unrelated to anything I've done with Ray so far, but maybe it will join this new, active, fashionable crowd. Which is one of the topics that I'm working on, and it's attracting all the attention. I can hardly speak about the other things nowadays because, you show the birds moving in clouds in the sky, and people dream, and it's like astrophysics. It's very good for mediatic purposes. There's also good physics. I hope to convince you that there are interesting problems behind. So this is going to be mostly numerical. We're working, and other people also, on having more analytical descriptions, starting with continuous descriptions. And this talk will be really about microscopic simulations in which things, points, move in some space and try to move together, and under which conditions can they move together. And I basically have two sets of so-called active particles. The one polar ones, which is what you might think of first in terms of modeling birds, fish, school, whatever. You have little vectors moving in space. And apolar particles, which are elongated, or at least they are endowed with some axis, and they act basically like they align pneumatically with others, and they are forced to move somehow. That's the active part. So that's work done mostly with Francesco Ginelli, which is a postdoc here, Franck Reynaud, a student, Guillaume Grégoire, previous collaborator, and recently we actually, instead of fighting each other, we collaborating with Sriram Ramaswamy and his group, and they have very nice results, and I show some of them. Okay. Yeah, it's supposed to start with a movie. I don't know if you see well here. Maybe we could have the lights a bit dimmer. On the right is Rome, another place of interest. Yeah, that actually. Okay. Rome at dusk, and then the little traces that you see on the screen here are not dirt on the picture, it's just clouds, large, very large crowds of starlings. And so at dusk, they gather from smaller groups into larger and larger groups and move around for an hour or so and then settle in the trees. So that's a problem for the city and other cities around. Here, there's a European project called Starlings and Flag, I don't remember what for, coordinated by Giorgio Parisi. And whose main objective is to get 3D data of that sort of thing. So they are filming the birds from three different viewpoints right now, trying to reconstruct in 3D positions and orientations. They're more or less succeeding in reconstructing smallish groups of a few thousand birds, which is already something. One problem in this business is that there is no detailed 3D data, either on fish or on birds or whatever. Okay, so the motivational part is simple. You have things moving together at all scales in nature, also man-made things, robots and stuff like this, from cells to even molecular models would be inside cells to any fish, larger animals, birds. This is another starling picture, and artificial granular media, which are shaken, and I will show a movie of this. Okay, for a physicist, and this is a physics audience, so I don't have to motivate this too much. when you see collective motion everywhere, you're tempted to look for universal properties, and that's what I'm doing. This is usually the slide where biologists raise their hands and protest. And so what we want to do really is to look for universal properties, and to look for them, it's better to use minimal models as simple as possible. Minimal in the sense that if you take out one of their ingredients, the phenomenon that you're interested in will disappear. Okay. So we want, of course, no trivial collective motion, in the sense there are no leaders to follow, in which case, okay, it's not so surprising. No ordering field that will, you know, for migrational purposes or whatever, would be there. In particular, in the birds or some species, they move around with no particular obvious purpose. That's for biologists to think about, but no ordering field, no global interaction either, in order to stress, even though it might not be realistic, that you don't need global interactions or long-range interactions to maintain orientational order and cohesion of a large group. Okay. So the strategy, I already briefly sketched it, is to use microscopic, as simple as possible, models, in the hope of capturing universal properties of them. Okay. Also to increase numerical efficiency. Okay. So we work at the microscopic level where we have individual things moving in some space. That has also the advantage of including, of course, implicitly all the good fluctuations and noise terms if you're thinking of a mesoscopic description, which nobody knows so far what is really. There's no consensus on a microscopic or mesoscopic in terms of weak noise terms, descriptions of these things. I will maybe speak about this if I have enough time, which is unlikely. And I want to stress here that the fluid is neglected in this talk, and this might not be so bad for birds or fish, some fishes, and it's certainly not a good idea if you're thinking of bacteria moving in some fluid. And then, actually, you can make a connection with recent work by Ray, in which you look at some nano micro objects moving in a fluid, creating a large scale, long range hydrodynamic field. And for bacteria, I believe, and more and more people believe now, that the main interaction for bacteria freely swimming in a fluid is actually just hydrodynamic interaction. But I will not touch this here. Okay, absolutely minimal model. And in fact, we recently thought about even simplifying this further, but again, I skipped this. The model here will be a Vikshak inspired model. Vikshak in 1995 introduced what has been a central Ising-like model for that problem. You have point particles moving off lattice or on a lattice if you prefer, and typically in driven overdamped dynamics, meaning order one in time thing in which forces are just convert into velocity. Basically, they move at fixed velocity, so they are never tired. Energy is always injected in the system. There's no inertia, there's power update of everything at discrete time steps. So the only thing you have to do, you have these points moving in some space. They move with velocity V0 at time steps delta t, and so basically you displace them by some fixed distance at each time step, and the only problem is to choose in which direction they will move. And that is done basically in the simplest Vikshak model by a local interaction range R0 set to 1. Okay, I have some neighbors at a given time, and one obvious thing I can do is to align with my neighbors, respecting the symmetries of a problem. So if I'm a little vector, polar particle, fish, bird, etc., I will just calculate the mean velocity in this neighborhood, okay, and move according to this average, local average velocity, plus some noise term, which you can take of various kinds. But for example, you calculate this new direction, you add a random angle of some amplitude. Okay, so in this talk, yeah, I've restricted myself to the problem without a cohesion force to keep things together, so they only stay and move together if you have a finite density of them in some finite box. We also worked on, if you have a large group put initially together, it will fly apart because I'm not introducing here the cohesion force that you could think of. So just alignment. And the noise source is a random angle here. So to be more explicit, in 2D, usually this talk can be given without equations at all. So here are a few, nevertheless. you have the local order parameter, which is average velocity for polar particle, or the local pneumatic tensor for apolar pneumatic particles, calculated for particle J, so that's within this neighborhood of radius R0. This returns the direction of the order parameter for the tensor. This means the axis of the largest eigenvector, eigenvector corresponding to the largest eigenvalue, plus this noise term, where sigma is the amplitude of the noise. And that's the new direction of guide J at time t plus delta t. Okay, now there are two parameters here important, really, the sigma, the noise strength, and the density of particles, initial total density of particles in your box. Okay, so you move them, so that's the new direction, then you move from previous position to the new position by adding V0, delta t, and this along this direction. Here, for the apolar case, that's a polar case, for the apolar case it's the same thing, but there's a plus and minus symbol here, stressing the symmetry of these objects. You can, we decide to move them along this axis with equal probabilities to respect the pneumatic symmetry. Okay. Okay, now the problem is fairly well posed. At zero noise, you have perfect order, because at a finite density from place to place, you have perfect alignment locally, and this spreads out in the whole system pretty fast. At strong noise, for example, sigma equals 1 in the, what I was showing before, you add a random angle of amplitude 2 pi, so basically you have random walkers non-interacting. So in between, something must happen, and the question is whether this happens at a zero noise level. As soon as I put some noise, I destroy the perfect alignment or not. And the answer is no. I can have finite noise regimes in which the order, the orientational order, exists asymptotically. So there is a finite noise level sigma c at which you go from no collective motion, that has strong noise, sigma larger than sigma c, to collective motion or orientational order for sigma smaller than sigma c. And equivalently, in the rho, sigma, rho density, noise intensity plane, you can have the same thing. If you fix the noise now and vary the density, at low density, objects interact not often enough to keep memory of their previous interactions, so they lose this memory and they're basically random walking around. On the other hand, if the density is large enough, they have frequent encounters, and from encounter, interaction to interaction, this orientational alignment mechanism can propagate in space-time and give rise to true long-range order. So you have true long-range order here in 2D, in the polar case at least, and I'll show that now. And roughly, the transition line in this parameter plane here goes like square root, at least for small densities, and that's given by some mean field arguments as well, and may be going like rho to the 3/4 of a pneumatic case, and that's not so sure, and we have no simple argument for this. Okay, a short result, main results of the two cases, the polar case and the pneumatic case. In the polar case, basically the transition to the collective motion is discontinuous in the sense of a first order transition, phase transition. Nevertheless, at least to some scales, you can observe super diffusive behavior of individuals at the transition. And there's a peculiar, the ordered phase in which things move together actually is not trivial at all, and I will show that it consists in large, high density, high order banded structures traveling in space, separated by low density, disordered things. Okay, the transition is discontinuous. It's a long and unfortunately ongoing story with Vic Sheck, who contests these results. But basically, here for the pure Vic Sheck model, if you look at same density, which is probably 2, and noise intensity varying here, at a smallish size, intermediate size, say 128 here, you recall the order parameter. The order parameter here is just the mean velocity, or the magnitude of the mean velocity, average over the whole population and over time. So at low noise, this is order 1 values and goes to order 0 with residual 1 over square root n levels. At large noise intensity, there's a transition here. You see the transition looks fairly continuous at this size in black symbols, and it's starting to look rather sharply discontinuous at the larger size under the same conditions here. And this gets worse and worse, or better and better, depending on your point of view. If you increase system size, you actually jump discontinuously very clearly. And this is accompanied by all the hallmarks of first-order transitions, hysteresis, bimodal distributions of the order parameter, etc. Here is another set of results in which we plot the so-called Binder cumulant, which is a ratio of moments of the order parameter, which is used for studying finite size scaling in continuous phase transitions usually, but in discontinuous phase transitions, we expect this thing to show a minimum as a function of the control parameter here, and that's what happens as you see here. No, that's the order parameter, sorry. Here is the Binder cumulant. At larger and larger, if you increase system size, you develop a minimum here. Eventually, in some cases, even goes to negative values, and that's another signature of a first-order transition. Okay. So the transition is not continuous, contrary to what was originally said by Wigshek, because they were looking at sizes smaller than too small to see this discontinuous character appearing. So there is a mesoscopic intermediate size beyond which you have to go to see the discontinuous character of the transition. Nevertheless, over the range of scale, at least over the range of scales over which the transition appears continuous, you have interesting behavior. For example, this is of interest to biologists who are recording trajectories or ethologists. The mean square displacement versus time in log-log shows a clear super diffusive behavior, meaning the exponent here is not 1 or 2. And this is of a range of scales which can go very far, but I'm not sure of the asymptotic value of this, at least. Okay, the mechanism which is that's interesting for this super diffusive behavior is a snapshot of density field and a coarse grain density in a large system. When you have large, high density packets moving ballistically, when you have high order, it's always coupled to high density or vice versa, high density, high order. So the life of somebody in there is either I'm in one of these packets and I travel ballistically for some time until I'm left behind, or this packet I'm in merges or splits or whatever, and then I may be left over in some less dense regions in which I will be random walking. And so if you take, for example, PDF of the order parameter averaged over one guy locally, you have this bimodal distribution, meaning either I am flying, I'm in this peak here for some times, or I'm random walking around this peak here. And you put an arbitrary threshold in between, record the statistics of flight times, ballistic flights, and you get a parallel distribution for these flights, which corresponds, the exponent here corresponds to the exponent for the trajectories. So here you have, in effect, lazy flights emerging at some transition from purely local interactions. Now, the birds don't have the little power load generator in their heads. In 3D, it's basically the same thing, so I will skip it here. It's a time series of the order parameter in 3D, where you see clearly the discontinuous jumps from order to disorder in an intermediate size system, leading to bimodal distribution of the order parameter. Okay, hysteresis, I'll skip. I'll try to show you this movie. Usually it stops in the middle, so that we will have ways to show. Interestingly, also the initial guesses about this sort of models were that the transition would be continuous, a new non-equilibrium transition with exponents, la la la. And the ordered phase was assumed in some analytical work by Tu and Toner to be a homogeneous in density. So everybody moving together in some homogeneous density simple state, and it's not, in fact. First, I'll show you here first what happens if you do typical phase ordering experiment in which you start from a random initial condition with random positions, random orientations, here for a very large number of objects, and how order sets in. I will quench this system into the ordered phase at low noise and see how structures appear and how correlations build up. And I hope it's going to work properly, but I usually have a problem if I recover the mouse. So it starts pretty fast, and it stops, yeah? Okay. This is reproducible. One way of doing it is, I think this way it works. You don't see as well, but... So it looks like vortices and things like that. There are no vortices. And very fast you reach order... structures of the order of the system size, and in fact this phase ordering is quite special. It's difficult to define a correlation length, but using the exponential tails and the correlation functions, you can show that you can extract one length, and it grows linearly with time, which is pretty fast. We might remind you of some binary fluids for some of the experts in the audience. But the correlation functions, the space, the two-point correlation functions are really special. We don't know really what they are. They have Paolo behavior over pretty large range of scales and cutting, being cut off by some exponential tail, and that's the exponential tail that I've used here. But it seems that at smaller scales you have, algebraic correlations with varying exponent in time, which is very strange. So we're working on this. It is clearly an unusual phase ordering. We contrast it with apolar case next. If I come to back here, sorry. I think we skipped some things. Yes, of course. Okay, now after this long or not so long transient, it takes a long time for the system to rearrange itself in a steady configuration if it's a large system. And what you see is something like this. Again, a movie. Again, the coarse grain density field that you see in time. And the system finally has arranged its steps here in one banded structure moving at a velocity which is very close to the microscopic velocity, 0.8 or 0.9, the microscopic velocity, which is a fluctuating object and moving fairly regularly. And in this region behind or in front of the bands, you have low density and no order. So again, the life of somebody here is either I'm carried within the band ballistically, or I'm left behind after some time in a random walk. That's not okay. Here are profiles of order, parameter, and density for a typical object like this. And these are really solitary objects. Yes. In 3D, it's the same. In 2D, in space-time, where we project here along the transverse direction to the ordered, starting from ordered initial condition, random positions, but perfect alignment in one direction, recording the density projected on the other direction, we see the appearance of these bands in time. And at no point along this evolution does this lead to wave train, regular wave train. So they're really like solitary objects coexisting. Here is a late configuration. There are weak interactions between these objects in a very large system. You see that it's not an equally spaced thing. So it's not a finite wavelength instability, and it's not a wave train at the nonlinear level. It's a collection of solitary, weakly interacting objects. Okay. The width is fairly well defined in the sense that the problem is, since this is not a wave train, we have to measure the width from various experiments, increasing system size, but you never have the same regular configuration. So the average width, the average profile is fairly well defined quantity at given parameter values. Yeah. Interactions between them we have not characterized very well so far. And this is reminiscent for people in zoology, biology, of some behavior they see in large groups of mammals, herds of gnus or wildebeest or whatever, things like that, in which you often have a dense front with some land stance tail. I mean, okay, now for the pneumatic case, I mean, whatever time I have left, so it's the same model again, except that the particles now are not little vectors, they're little rods. Okay, and you force them to move, that's the active part. either along a longer axis with probability 1/2, 1/2 in both possible directions, or any other way you might think of, which will couple order, local order, and density. Okay, if you couple order and density, there were before that this work predictions of Ramaswamy that under generic conditions there would be generic conditions meaning non-equilibrium system, but respecting of course the symmetries. You can write down all possible terms, and there is at least one term which is not allowed when you go from at equilibrium from, you know, some free energy function or whatever. There are terms allowed by the symmetries that are not allowed in an equilibrium context, and he showed in a nice work that if this term is actually present in the dynamics, it might give rise to what he calls giant density fluctuations, in which local density fluctuations in a subsystem, okay, would not go like the square root of a number of particles, the mean number of particles, but would go like the mean in 2D. So the root mean square of these fluctuations in 2D would go like the mean. And you could not define, it would be impossible to define density, mean density in a subsystem. So that's a true non-equilibrium effect in the sense that it's clearly related, at least in this work, within this work, to this term, which of course satisfies the symmetries of a problem, but is not allowed in an equilibrium derivation. Okay, and we do see that. Okay, these are the results that I will show now, basically in 2D. We have results in 3D also, but I want to show them probably. The transition to quasi-long-range order is only to quasi-long-range order, and it's a Coase-Dalgetsch Fowler-like transition, just like in equilibrium. Okay, the phase ordering leading to this is fairly classic non-conserved order parameter domain growth, with some twists that I may speak about. And again, the ordered phase asymptotically is consists of a large structure with high density and high order coexisting with some not so dense and disordered region, and this is fluctuating heavily, leading to these giant fluctuations. So the transition from order to disorder, we look at the pneumatic order parameter versus noise strength here for various system sizes. You see that these curves do not cross, and as you increase system size, they go lower and lower in a typical signal for quasi-long-range order only. Indeed, at fixed noise values varying system size, the mean order parameter decreases like a power law, and the exponent of this power law increases as the noise level increases. For all of you who know the XY model, this should be the message is it's the same thing. If you don't know this, then okay. There is only quasi-long-range order. This ordered quasi-ordered phase is critical in the sense that it has this algebraic decay of the correlation length. It has algebraic correlation functions in space, etc., etc. The exponent here of this decay goes from zero at zero noise continuously to some values, and we estimate this is a value at equilibrium. It's actually rather consistent with what we see. So we have no reason to suspect that the transition is different from what it is at equilibrium in the XY model in this case. So it's interesting, if you just recall the first part of the talk, here are two problems which at equilibrium are similar, in the sense if you have not moving little things but spins fixed on some lattice size or whatever, they fall into the same class, the XY class. Here, for the apolar case, your transition remains what it is at equilibrium. For the polar case before, you have two long-range order and a first-order transition. Okay. What is this here? This is the same thing as here, but on the other side of a threshold where you cross over to -1/2 decay, which is the normal disordered behavior. Correlation functions are algebraic log plots of the two-point correlation functions or orientational correlation functions here. This is all typical of an XY quasi-long range order Costa-Litz-Fowles transition. Now, what's happening here when you do the same experiment as before, starting from a large, not so large here, random position, random orientation, initial condition, and you quench this into the quasi-ordered phase. Here's a movie which may or may not go to the end. Density field. You're seeing density. So here are forming bands with typically triangular, triangular defects. Stop. We'll go maybe directly here. And this lattice of fairly high ordered bands separated by defects is coarsening gradually with a correlation length either for the order parameter of the density field, which grows like square root of time. The movie will accelerate now or soon. That's it. That's much faster. And we'll reach configurations typical of the asymptotic state in a finite box, in which you have one large object with not so well defined, with very large fluctuations, which reorders itself from time to time completely. And this is the state in which you have the giant fluctuations. If you take a sub-box here, measure fluctuation of numbers, the mean will be the mean density, of course, but the root mean square will be also the mean density. The mean number, sorry. Okay. Here are the correlation functions for phase ordering. They are quite normal, except that they have a cusp at small distance, signaling that the interfaces are highly fluctuating, poorly defined or ill-defined objects that you cannot scale out completely at large times. And this is also related, I believe, to the fluctuations. Here are a time series. There is a time series of the order parameter in the ordered phase in which you see, okay, it's fluctuating, and you have very large excursions to low values, which are rare events, but strong events, and they correspond, so this time corresponds to this, where you go from this ordered structure to this ordered structure in a fast rearrangement of a global structure, of a global thing. Okay? Now, for those of you who know that sort of problems, it might seem strange that there is indeed a completely equilibrium-like transition and this strongly non-equilibrium effect in the density field coupled to order, obviously, because you have only order when you have high density. Okay, so we're working on this. And in particular, we derived this mesoscopic equations for the density and order parameter field. That's work with Ramaswamy. And what I want to stress here is the term which coupling density and order parameter, which is responsible for the giant fluctuations that I will show next, actually. But also this term is important, I think. You have a multiplicative noise here, noise term here, multiplicative in the density and conserved coupling also the order parameter. So these two objects here are quite important. We're working on understanding and simulating this mesoscopic equation now. The giant fluctuation, I should have shown them before, maybe here they are. For internal subsamples of size n particle, typically, there is the root mean square of the number of fluctuations within these boxes. You see that in blue line here, it's in the disordered state, you have a square root behavior like you would expect naturally at equilibrium or in disordered phase. In the ordered phase or quasi-ordered phase here, two different sizes, 128 to 56, you see that you clearly don't have a one-half low. And as you increase system size, you go to slope more or less 1 in agreement with Ramaswamy's prediction. Okay. And here is an experimental result of Ramaswamian students, which will appear briefly in Science. They are shaking don't see very well. They're shaking. They tried with rice, naturally, basmati rice, but it was not convincing enough. It was harder. So they fabricated those elongated metallic objects with, of course, the elongated shape and no polar behavior. So they're really apolar and symmetric. And they're shaking them under appropriate conditions, recording densities. And they have, you can look at this paper, they have actually seen rather convincingly the giant density fluctuations. And here's the motion of it, one of these non-equilibrium pneumatic defects pushing through. And this very motion is again a signature of non-equilibriumness of the system. Okay, stop. Now in 3D we have the same things, more or less. I want to finish on this, which is the puzzle that we are working on. I told you that the transition is XY-like, and the quasi-long-range order phase as well. In fact, there is a large body of work on so-called quasi-universal distribution of the order parameter in the XY model and other related systems. And the red line below this is a typical, almost universal distribution of this order parameter rescaled properly in the XY model. If we rescale our order parameter and measure the distribution function for in the quasi-long-range order phase, what we see is perfect match, but for a tail here at low values of the order parameter. These are the large excursions to zero corresponding to the large rearrangement of the structure. And this tail, well, so far it's not clear what it is. It's not clear whether it's asymptotically able to change the position of the mean, which governs the phase transition, at least what I've shown you before. So imagine this tail being whatever, algebraic or something, you know, exponential or algebraic, something worse, would be in principle able maybe to change the position of the mean and alter the apparent equilibrium character of a transition. That's numerically going to be a nightmare, so we don't know. But here is a signature of the influence of these strong fluctuations, strong density fluctuations on the order parameter distribution. Okay. Summary. Okay. What's remarkable here is how things change depending on the local symmetry of the object in spite of being the same at equilibrium. Again, you have two long-range order for the polar case and only quasi-long-range order in the pneumatic case, and the strong segregation between high density, high order, and the coupling between density and order is crucial, and any mesoscopic description should take this into account properly, including possibly the noise terms. The order of the transition changes, of course. Mesoscopic description, a number of groups are working on this now in the hope of having, you know, something universal going over the details. The one I've showed you before is actually derived under some continuous limit and several assumptions from this microscopic dynamics that I've shown you. And last but not least, an important step will also be to include the fluid in all these attempts to model behavior of objects, especially those moving, small objects moving in a fluid, like bacteria and things. Okay, thank you. Right on time. Right on time.